Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving in Washington.
And from member station KGOU in Norman, Oklahoma, I'm Ken Rudin.
Ken, it's a pleasure to talk to you, even though you're so far away. I need to fill you in on a couple of things. The size of the Republican field of candidates for president, that's getting a little smaller. Apparently, Rick Perry has decided he's not going to be a candidate after all.
Well, wait a second. I'm in Oklahoma. Couldn't you have told me this sooner? A lot of big changes in the Republican field this week, starting with John Huntsman going from I Have a Ticket to Ride.
She's got a ticket to ride.
To
I don't want to spoil the party, so I'll go. I would hate my disappointment to show.
I think he had the wrong Beatles song in New Hampshire. So we have John Huntsman gone, which is not a surprise. And it was not the most wholehearted, excited endorsement of Mitt Romney,
no.
But it wasn't as bad as Ted Kennedy endorsing Jimmy Carter at Madison Square Garden in 1980, of course. But it was not,
that
not
was sort
a lot
of a non-endorsement endorsement. All right. So John Huntsman dropped out of the race. That did not really change the shape of the contest very much. And his endorsement of Mitt Romney, as you say, seems sort of pro forma. And if you then go a little further into the week, a more difficult to understand development is the decision of Rick Perry to drop out. Why did he drop out just 24 hours before the one primary he was going to compete in?
Well, because the numbers show that he was not really competing in that. And
4%?
Obviously,
you don't think 4% is respectable?
No, and that's what you're worrying. You talk about, this really changes the dynamic endorsing Newt Gingrich. Well, first of all, we'll talk about Newt Gingrich in a few minutes, and we'll talk about that there seems to be some semblance or sense of momentum for Newt Gingrich in South Carolina.
It was happening.
He had another very good, very strong debate performance on Monday night in Myrtle Beach. I thought that was, very good. But, of course, it came at a time right after when a whole bunch of evangelical ministers decided that, look, the alternative to Mitt Romney should be Rick Santorum. And not Newt Gingrich.
Now, and not of course, Rick Perry.
And not Rick Perry. We saw Rick Perry's awful fifth-place showing in Iowa, a non-existent showing in New Hampshire.
Deadly.
And once he said after Iowa that, look, I'm going home to Texas to reassess, you knew the end was near. As you said, I would have thought that he would have lasted longer, perhaps, into South Carolina.
Yeah, if you're not going to drop right out after Iowa, which was the sensible thing to do, and which apparently half of his staff and supporters wanted him to do, then suddenly he bounces back and says, no, I still think that there's a need here for an alternative to Mitt Romney, and I'm going to go on to South Carolina. Didn't compete in New Hampshire, didn't contest it. So this was the only primary, because Iowa's a caucus. This was the only primary he competed in. This was the state where he announced his candidacy back in August on the 13th. This was a state where he could make a difference. Why, with one more debate to go and with the vote to go on Saturday, why drop out now?
Well, he was just showing no traction. And I agree with you. He was the only true Southerner in the race. You could make the case that Newt Gingrich represented Georgia in Congress, but, he was born in Pennsylvania. He doesn't speak Southern the way Rick Perry speaks Southern.
And he doesn't really live in the South now.
But the fact is, that's right, he lives in the northern South in McLean, Virginia. But somehow I think that, look, this was going to be the breaking point, the breaking moment for Rick Perry, and he looked at the numbers, and he could see that he can add as well as anybody, even though my understanding there would be no math.
So here we have the news on, and we are doing this podcast on Thursday, and we have the news this morning, first of all, that Iowa did not have a winner. The Iowa caucus folks announced that as a result of their certification process, they have learned that they cannot find the votes from 8 precincts, and they may never find the votes from 8 precincts. Therefore, Rick Santorum is ahead with 34 votes, but they're not going to declare a winner. They're going to say it was a split decision. That's a nice solution maybe for them, embarrassing little egg on the face of the Iowa Republicans, but it does have one effect. It means Mitt Romney can no longer say, I won Iowa and New Hampshire, and no one's ever done that but an incumbent president.
Well, that's true. And of course, ultimately, if Mitt Romney is the nominee, this will not matter at all. Bill Clinton, for different reasons, of course, did not win Iowa or New Hampshire. And as I recall, he was a nominee. So, at the end of all this, if Romney's the nominee, it's a little asterisk. But again, if he is the de facto, or at least the ostensible front runner, and let's just say he loses in South Carolina on Saturday, he's 1-for-3 in the first three contests, and we know the record of South Carolina in picking Republican nominees.
All right, so suddenly Newt Gingrich looms back into the picture after being largely discounted, but he has a great debate performance on Monday night, gets a standing ovation at one point from much of the audience, and then he seems to be the guy who's the beneficiary of growing doubts in South Carolina among Republicans because of Mitt Romney's stumbling performance on the tax issue. And Romney comes out and says, well, maybe I will release those tax results maybe in April when I'm really the nominee. And by the way, I think I'm paying about 15% as an effective tax rate on my enormous income. And all of these things are making people uneasy with him. Perhaps they're feeling a little bit as though he may be a little vulnerable. And as Rick Perry said in the debate, we can't fire our nominee in September. We have to vet him now. And the beneficiary of all that doubt and question seems to have been, in the South Carolina polls, Newt Gingrich, on the strength of that debate performance.
You're missing the most important thing, Ron. The most important thing is that Sarah Palin's full-throttled endorsement when she says, you know, if I were voting in South Carolina, I guess I would vote for Newt Gingrich to keep this race going.
And not because she thinks that much of Newt.
But you know what she said afterwards, which didn't get as much play? She said, and the big problem I'm talking about, we need to vet our nominee because 4 years ago we had a candidate who we didn't vet, and that really was trouble. Now, I assume she meant—
She did not mean herself, and she
exactly.
did not mean John McCain.
I assume she meant Barack Obama, but my goodness, if there was one candidate who was not vetted in 2008. Another thing about Mitt Romney, I'm not defending the tax issue and releasing the tax returns, but people forget— that this was a big issue in the Democratic race 4 years ago when Hillary Clinton refused to release her tax returns. As a matter of fact, Barack Obama didn't release his until the middle of March. And he said, Hillary Clinton, if you're not hiding something, I demand that you release it. And she didn't release hers until the middle of April. So, yes, Mitt Romney is on the defensive. Yes, he's looking kind of weak by saying, well, maybe I'll release them, maybe I won't. But remember, the Democrats went through the same thing 4 years ago, and the Democratic field didn't release their tax returns until the middle of April. So there. But having said that, Romney also does have other problems. The fact is, you know, when he talks about his tax rate is 15%, he's hammered by the right. He's hammered by Newt Gingrich saying, well, if you're paying 15%, then you should endorse my flat tax plan because that's 15%. And he's also hammered by the Democrats saying, wait a second, nobody's paying 15% in taxes. I think President Obama, paid 26%. And of course, many people pay more. So the income inequality issue rises again. And again, when Mitt Romney says,
I got a little bit of income from my book, but I gave that all away. And then I get speaker's fees from time to time, but not very much.
And it turns out he got $364,000. And that kind of stuff resonates. And again, you know, I'm not trying to make the Romney argument here, but this is all fodder and mutter for the Democrats in November.
Okay, so it's been a tough week. It's been a rough week for Mitt Romney, bad debate, all this talk about his taxes and just seeming not to have any kind of a common touch at all. And then the prop that's been under so much of his inevitability, which is that he was the first non-incumbent candidate to win Iowa and New Hampshire, that gets knocked out because of these funny numbers from Iowa. You would think that this was just the world's worst week for Romney, and the beneficiary of all of it seemed to be Gingrich. And then the story changes again, and we hear from Marianne Gingrich, who is wife number two, who has been almost entirely out of the media for many, many years and just standing back from this man's career. She has given an interview to ABC News, and it's going to air tonight about the same time as the debate, and it's going to include, well, stories like this.
I said to him, we've been married a long time, and he said, yes, but you want me all to yourself. Calista doesn't care what I do.
What was he saying to you, you think?
He was asking to have an open marriage, and I refused.
A lot of people are going to watch this. A lot of women in particular are going to watch this. They are going to assess for themselves whom they believe. And they're going to be disturbed, I think, partly at the portrayal of Newt Gingrich. I think they might also be somewhat disturbed at the portrayal of his current wife, Calista Gingrich, who is so prominently featured in his campaign and who is now being portrayed in this account from the second wife as being accepting of an open marriage arrangement.
Well, you know, of course, we're doing this podcast on Thursday morning, and of course, tonight is a debate, and this may or may not come up. Newt Gingrich has already said, look, I'm not going to say anything bad about my ex-wife. Newt Gingrich says the issue is not going into the past, it's looking to the future, and I assume we're going to hear that in the debate tonight. But again, not that we didn't know about Newt Gingrich's three marriages and two divorces and claims of unfaithfulness. But again, in a state like South Carolina, with so much at stake in Saturday's primary, this cannot help.
I wonder, too, if this doesn't give Rick Santorum an opportunity to one more time say, look, how can I catch a break here? I've gotten this endorsement from this group of evangelicals who met down in Texas. He doesn't seem to have gotten much help out of that. I now have been shown to have gotten at least as many votes, if not more votes, than Mitt Romney in Iowa. And why am I not the alternative? Why am I not with my family, with my, you know, extraordinarily upright kind of image, why am I not the beneficiary of all these problems for the other candidates?
Well, that's true. And yet, if a lot of voters' perceptions are being made from the debates, I think it's pretty clear, at least to me, that Newt Gingrich is a far more effective debater, more effective as a critic of President Obama than Rick Santorum. And I think that's a big part of Santorum's problems.
No question that people are looking for someone to beat Obama. This is coming up in polls again and again. I've got my problems with Gingrich. I've got that problem with Gingrich. But I want somebody who can go toe-to-toe with this president in those debates next fall. That's what I'm really looking for. Doesn't that get undercut a bit, though, if we have this much more vivid picture of Gingrich's moral dimension as a result of this video of Marianne talking about it in these measured, non-hysterical, very careful, but emotional terms?
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of truth to that. But and at the same time, I really thought that Bill Clinton was dead in the water in 1992 with all these stories coming out, many of them not rebutted by Bill Clinton. I thought this is the kind of issue that would have brought Bill Clinton down in 1992. But the thing is, Newt Gingrich has always had this baggage, these problems from his past that voters did know about. I still don't see, for the life of me, how he possibly could be the nominee. But again, it just extends this the Republican debate a little longer between a very weak front runner and a very, perhaps a critically weak, aggressive challenger.
Or flawed, I suppose. We could say flawed challenger.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And one guy who we haven't even mentioned yet is Ron Paul. And Ron Paul, you know, is still not going away. He'll still get his 15 to 20%, and he'll still be a force in the battle for the nomination. And yet, nobody's talking about him as a potential nominee.
Well, and that's in part perhaps because he's not likely to be a factor in Florida, where he's not going to be able to have the money to compete. But they're looking for a debater. They want someone to take Obama on. They see Obama saying no to things like the Keystone Pipeline, and without getting into all the issues on the Keystone Pipeline, pro and con, they think that anything that creates jobs is something that people are going to get behind. So Republicans think they've got a great vulnerability for the president there. I'm sure we'll hear Newt Gingrich talk about the Keystone Pipeline tonight. So that's what Republicans are looking for. They have a difficult decision to make.
Okay, Ron, one thing I want to mention before we go, very interesting and impressive showing by the opposition to Scott Walker in Wisconsin. They needed some, what, 560,000 signatures to put him on a recall ballot in the spring of 2012. The Democrats submitted over a million signatures to recall Scott Walker.
Now, let's say we all understand that when you submit a million signatures, many of those are going to be thrown out. They're not all going to be certified, which
Correct.
Is why they decided to go so far. They were aiming for 700 to give themselves a little margin of error, but they went way beyond that. They got over a million and got all the headline attention that they were hoping for. But what they don't have, they may have a million signatures, but they don't have one candidate yet to run against Scott Walker.
That's true. They're talking about former Dane County Executive Kathleen Falk. She's already announced her candidacy, but she's run statewide twice. She ran for attorney general and lost that. She ran for governor, lost a Democratic primary. Other Democrats are talking about Tom Barrett, the mayor of Milwaukee. He's a possibility. David Obie, the former congressman, is a possibility. You're absolutely right, though. It's one thing to submit a million signatures, and that's very impressive. It's another thing to get a candidate who can beat Scott Walker in this recall election, and that still remains to be seen. But again, a good week for the opponents of Scott Walker.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
In Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, I'm Ron Elving.
And from member station KGOU in Norman, Oklahoma, I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week, won't you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah.
For It's All Politics from NPR.